Blog Talk Radio.
From the directors of Reservoir Dogs, Desperado, Pulp Fiction, From Dusk Till Dawn, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Kill Bill, and Sin City, Tarantino and Rodriguez are back. Only this time, they're back to back with a double feature that'll tear you in two. First,
I got bit.
Bit by what?
If I told you, you probably wouldn't believe me.
Robert Rodriguez, Planet Terror.
Need you something. Open that door, will you, baby?
Plus,
fair lady, your chariot awaits.
Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof.
Will I frighten you? Is it my scar?
Two No Holds Barred feature length motion pictures for the price of one. Planet Terror and Death Proof. Only at the Grindhouse.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
As the intro infers, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Grindhouse. Welcome once again. We have a lot to get into. Your podcast Avengers have arrived. Daryl B., the indefatigable Captain Kirk, and of course, yours truly, D-Bert, a.k.a. the Afro Nerd. The call-in number, if you will, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Folks, we have an awful lot to discuss, including Matt Damon's latest triumph, perhaps, triumph with a question mark, that is Elysium. I saw it earlier today, so we have a lot to discuss. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove, and then we'll get to the colloquium. This is I Am Superman, old school funk groove. Roger Troutman will be back in a few moments, and again, let's groove.
I can do anything. You don't really know that guy that you made me with. Girl, I'm Superman. I know he gets lost and think of I can.
is the sky, it's the bird, it's the plane.
All right, folks, once again, that was the late, great Roger Troutman and I Am Superman, an old-school funk group. Boy, would it be interesting if they used some of that music for the Man of Steel 2 featuring Batman. I'm just putting it out there, just to be ironic. Let's have an old-school funk groove that purely says I Am Superman. I'm just thinking out loud, folks. Pardon me. The call-in number, once again, the water is warm. Don't be scared, as they say, 646-915-9620. Of course, it's 646-915-9620. All right, let's get to the team. First up, the indefatigable, irascible, irreplaceable, Captain James T. Kirk. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Well, thank you for the longer comic shop intro. All right.
Hey, listen, it went without a hitch, man. Don't complain. This time. And, of course, the irascible, always opinionated, and always correct, ironically, Daryl B.
Once again, thank you, sci-fi and fantasy fans, for your closed-mindedness. We'll get to that coming up in a second. It astounds me. How an institution built on imagination has so many people that lack it. Let's get started.
I see he's in a good mood this evening, Captain. And not so controversial. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to it. I saw Neil Blomkamp's Elysium featuring Matt Damon. And I was a little hesitant about seeing this. I saw District 9. I enjoyed District 9. And I appreciate the fact that Mr. Blomkamp was able to make it for what would be considered a low budget, about $30 million. Of course, he had a special friend in the name of Peter Jackson. So having Peter Jackson attached to District 9 doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. And he made a hell of a lot of money with that independent sci-fi thriller. So it was great, and he has this style of filmmaking that is very, very sci-fi, high-tech, low-tech, and very realistic-looking. You know it's the future, but it seems to be a future that has some kind of measurement to it. It's not so way out there that it's not tangible. His vision of the future, so far, a dystopic future. He seems to be on dystopia second time around. But the way that he makes his films look, they have this real look about them. This movie, Elysium, takes place in 2154. He even got the years right. Because oftentimes, we will put something 10 years in the future, 20 years in the future, even 30 years in the future, and we're seeing flying cars and stuff. And it feels a little off. I think when I'm thinking of Escape from New York, the future for Escape from New York was 1999, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, you know, the film was made in 83. Was 83? Yeah, 83, 80. No, I'm sorry. Actually, I think it was 81, I believe. 81? Yeah, 81. But for them, 1999 might as well have been a year, like a century ago. It's not realistic. So you made it 2154. I said, okay, that's enough time to kind of say, all right, we might see some of this stuff. So I appreciate that. As of late, and I've been mentioning this to the captain, I've been speaking to the captain about this, I'm very much into multiculturalism. I want to see everybody doing their part, and I want to see everybody being represented. Not just black folk, but brown folk, yellow folk, red folk. I want to see everybody, even the gay folks. I want to see everybody, whether I agree or disagree with your lifestyle, that's not my bag. I want to see truth, on even in fantasy, sci-fi. I want to see truth. I want to see people as they should be perceived. So I take issue sometimes when you see the square-jawed white hero all the time. Sometimes, yes. All the time, the hero, that turns me off. Matt Damon, he gets a pass. He gets a pass in the afternoon. Not that he was asking for the pass, but there's something about what he brings to the game that's intriguing. He really is a phenomenal actor. So I enjoyed the film. It wasn't perfect, but it was a pretty cool film, no doubt. When Captain and I spoke about this, he said he's a hard reviewer. Jokingly, I said, but he knows he's a hard reviewer. So he said, very good. I said, okay, if he says very good, it's excellent. I use him as a measuring stick. He said very good. Oh, this must be great. And it was great, but there's some issues. I don't want to bloviate for too long. Let's go to the captain. He'll give you a synopsis, and I'll come in. Daryl didn't see it, so we're going to be respectful about spoilers. And we will revisit his opinion next week. But, Captain, give us your thoughts on Elysium.
Well, I thought the movie was very good. The movie, as the great Afro-Nerd said, takes place in 2154. Essentially, it's about the haves and have-nots. The have-nots are on Earth. The haves live off Earth. That's really the whole plot in All in All, without revealing too much. That's really what essentially it is about. Now, that being said, I thought Matt Damon and Jodie Foster's performance was excellent, definitely up to par. I thought that the effects in the movie were great, very real, unlike, you know, Zack Snyder. You know, it looks like a cartoon when he gets going. If I wanted to see a cartoon, I'd go see the cartoon. But anyway, back to the point.
Hey, what you really think?
Wow, that sounded familiar. It didn't come from me this time.
Back to the point. I thought it was actually an almost great movie, but it wasn't great. It was missing something. Maybe because the storyline was rather so simple. I don't know. A lot of times, simple storylines actually do it. But it just seemed like it was missing something for me to put a great stamp on it. I just thought it was very good. Good fight scenes also. I'm very critical of fight scenes. A lot of times I see these fight scenes and say, come on, your budget is through the roof. You can't do a better fight scene. Great camera angles during the fight scenes also. The whole team knew exactly what they were doing. I just thought, you know, starts off a little slow, then it gets going, and then once it gets going, you have a good movie. There really wasn't anything for me really to beat up, as I typically do, you know, with my boxing gloves. It's like beating up a fourth grader or something like that, the way I go in at it sometimes. But there was nothing there to beat up. So I just thought it was a very good movie. And I give, you know, Matt Damon, hell of a performance. Jodie Foster, hell of a performance. Keep up the good work. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, real quick about this thing. A couple of things that's kind of connected to the movie, just something that came to my mind. The audience is fully aware I'm obsessed with seeing some kind of Black Panther film come to fruition. And I think maybe at this year's D23 Expo, Daryl probably knows more about this than I do, D23 is Disney's Expo, or Disney's version of the Comic-Con, so to speak, with their properties. And, of course, Marvel was bought by Disney, so they're going to discuss some Marvel properties. We will talk about Big Hero 6, which was a comic book, and it's going to get the animated treatment through Disney. But they're also allegedly going to reveal, I believe, Phase 3 of their next wave of comic book intellectual properties at D23. And I'm seeing it on the Internet. Everyone's, you know, they point to, they have a picture of Black Panther. This is like a weird thing I can't say it's weird. I guess it's only because it's just frustrating when you know, in this year, in this era, that we still have to fight for this kind of stuff. It's always a tug of war to see a man of color or a woman of color represented in a film that goes against trope or goes against stereotypes. So anyway, you go on the internet, you do a quick cursory search. When they discuss Phase 3, they always have that picture of the Black Panther. I mean, they're whatever. So somebody, they're afraid to deal with the obvious. You're going to have some major black, brown, yellow, red hero, because the world, like I said before, the world is multicultural, and just as the Republican Party, and I'm a conservative, this is not Afro Nerd Radio yet, but everyone's going to have to adapt to the new world order, and that includes black folk, brown people, people of color. Anyway, what does this have to do with Neil Blomkamp? I'm pretty excited about Elysium, so I go on the internet and I say, okay, what does Neil Blomkamp think about Marvel or DC? He has an opinion. all nerds think alike. Because of the trajectory of Elysium, people are asking, well, Neil, what are your thoughts about doing a Marvel or DC film? He kind of sort of poo-pooed on it. He's already looking at it kind of as a corporate kind of thing. So he's kind of being, I don't want to use the term snooty, but he's being a little vague about wanting to do a Marvel property. So in perfect Afro-nerd fashion, I tweeted a suggestion to him. And it's not unlike my tweets aren't getting read sometimes by the muckety muck. So we never know. But I said, take a look at an African hero. You're from South Africa. You have some familiarity with the continent. Maybe you might want to check into doing that. I mean, this would be the perfect film. His look, I think, would be very – and also as far as doing things that are expensive but not overly expensive. The Black Panther would be worthy of maybe $120, $130 million treatment. And you see how well Elysium turned out. You might not have to do the Del Toro $200 million thing. So, real quick, and I want to bring Dowell. I know Dowell didn't see, but I know he still has an opinion. When you go to the EW website, Entertainment Weekly, they give it a pretty high praised review. But when you look at the review, and I would implore our readership, excuse me, go to EW. .com, go to popwatchew.com, check out the review on Elysium. And they said that the film was sophisticated, visually stunning, but then there's the ending. And then when he started to unpack on the ending, I have to admit, I agree, that it starts to go into a tropey area. So I'm going to leave it at that. I don't want to give too much away. I could go into more detail, but I want to be respectful to the audience who has not seen this film, because I do want you to see it. Darryl, you didn't see it yet, but you still have an opinion. Right before we went on air, you had a feeling about it. So let us know what you think about Elysium from what you know.
Well, it ties into several statements you did before. I'm frankly sick and tired. And I don't know if, again, I haven't seen the film. My opinion may change once seeing it. But the way this was trailered, it really was a racial divide to me. If I'm watching these trailers, I see all the white people up top except for one Asian person getting cancer treatments. And on the bottom, except for Matt Damon, everybody else is an ethnic race down below. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I don't need to be preached to in the movie thing. That's why I backed away from it the first week. You know, I'll see it. But the way the trailer came across, all right, you put it succinctly. You want to see more than just the typical white hero, and these things. And I'm the same way, but I'm going the other way. It's okay to have a black or ethnic bad guy as long as they're well-formed and well-developed. It's okay to You know, it's just the I'm being 100% honest here, folks. The trailer really turned me off, and each successive trailer turned me off. And then you're talking about tropes. I see the little girl, and I'm like, oh, here it goes. Here it goes. He's got to risk everything for the little girl now. This is just from seeing the trailer now. Or he's going to be used as a pawn against them. Here we go. You know, like, stuff that, I don't know if Blomkamp controls the trailers, but that, I was speaking honest, the trailer turned me off. I don't know if Cap has a theory for it, but...
I do.
Yeah, it turned me off, because I saw it, and I immediately thought of those tropes right away. Cap, floor is yours, man.
Now, here, what I'm about to say is really an Afro-nerd segment, but it needs to be said. It just needs to be said. When you go into IMDb, right, Internet Movie Database for the uninitiated, but the comic shop, they are initiated. But anyway, that being said, when you go into IMDb and you look up the 20 most searched actors, they're normally 9 times out of 10 white. Every now and then you will see Will Smith, you will see a Denzel, but for most part, they are white. Now, what's happening here in the world, only reason why you have a Denzel, you have a Idris Elba, you have a Will Smith, is because the conquering people are somewhat losing their grip. China never conquered. North Korea never conquered. But the powers that be are a conquering people. And when human beings within the last 1,000 years, right, this human being is actually lower than an animal at this given point, because animals, when you attack them, they either turn away or they fight. That's what they do. They don't worship their attacker. They don't do that. That's why you don't have a lion living in your house. A lion will turn on you, and if he gets hungry, he'll eat you. It's not going down. Human beings, they worship their conqueror. So you have over 5.5 billion people on this planet worshiping the powers that be. And they are happy worshiping the powers that be. This is why you get the movies in this manner, because it only makes sense. Now, if you're a decision maker from that standpoint and you understand the mentality of people, you don't lose when you put that white person out there, even though you may be able to find someone who's Asian, could go do the job, or someone who's black. You might be taking a chance. This is what works, because the people of the planet have been conquered outside of China, except for China, North Korea. Other than that, you have been conquered. So it makes sense, because the conquered people always worship. And you black people, you know, you definitely worship white people. Look at how the women with their Caucasian hair hats walk around. That is worship, whether you realize it or not. So we get these movies in this manner because for most part, it works. But now, it hasn't been a paradigm shift. It is a slight shift. This is why you have an Idris Elba. This is why you have a Denzel. This is why you have a Will Smith. So you could start to begin to do things. But the powers that be have to let go of their grip entirely in order to get what you really want out of these individuals. Even if they go do the movie, your movie more or less might not be portrayed the way it should be. And that being said, it's really an insanity on these other people going to powers that be, especially black people, because black people never needed anybody. They needed the physicality of the black man, and they also needed all of his resources coming out of Africa to build the world. So it's an insanity, Stockholm Syndrome. It's a type of worship. Why you constantly go to the powers that be and say, we need to see this, we need to see that. It really doesn't make sense from their standpoint. You're a conquering people. You are worshiping me. So what you really need to see is this. And that's really why we get the movies in the way that we do. That's why Hollywood is the way that it is. This is why the Asian Indians, had to go do Bollywood. They did their own thing because they're not going to get their representation there in Hollywood. So that's ultimately what it comes down to. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Okay, for the listening audience, this is the Comic Shop.
Yes.
We will probably revisit this conversation for Afro Nerd, because I even sent a link to Daryl that for the next topic, because Afro Nerd still will deal with not just the political, but we, you know, as far as like the show itself, we still will delve into pop culture and comics, maybe from a different perspective, you know, not so, you know, not so much of a skeletal kind of thing. You know, when we talk about comic books here and fantasy, it's a bit more specific and less political per se, So for the next segment for the Afro show, there is an article out of the Portland Mercury newspaper that talked about why Batman can't be black. So we're going to have to go in. It's really the same kind of thing. As a matter of fact, for the next segment, I guess it will be kind of a political thing. We're going to have to talk about the Doctor Who thing for a moment. You know, let's go to the phones briefly. Phones, then a quick nerdcore groove, and why we did not get a black Doctor Who. So I guess we're stuck on this for a minute.
Okay. I'm sorry about that, but you know, I had to go in.
Now, everyone is allowed to be passionate, man. It's no problem. I hear you completely. You know, it's a bit much. You know, I like Matt Damon. It's not always about race, because it's about quality. And a white person can certainly do a film that I will enjoy, and I will continue to see films that just happen to have a white person there. With the case of Matt Damon, I like the guy. I like what he brings to the game. So I don't get that same sense of, I don't know, like Tom Cruise. I don't really hate him either, but there's a sense of realism, I think, that's more with Matt Damon as a real guy. So that's maybe my impression. But at the end of the day, maybe even a Wesley Snipes, he's out now. We get him back through the form. He's kind of been blue. He's kind of been in a B movie period now for some reason. But he could have done a film like this 10 years ago. Maybe he can do it again. But Wesley could have pulled this off, definitely. You know, and he can fight too. Anyway, let's go to the phones. The phones, nerdcore groove. Then why no black Doctor Who? All right, 312. Welcome to the comic shop. What's up? Tell us who you
are. Hi, this is Kim Success in Chicago. How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
How you doing, ma'am?
Well, I kind of I had to look back over the synopsis of the show, because I went and read that why Batman can't be black, and I had to look and see, oh man, that's an Afro Nerd next segment. But since the captain eloquently opened this door, as nerds and lovers of the comics, how is the future being laid out? You know, when they're saying in the next 20 to 30 years, you know, the dominant culture is not going to be what we see in movies. So are we going to still be worshiping something that's not even the dominant culture anymore? I mean, it's like you can't recast old characters, Batman, Superman, that kind of thing. But as Afro Nerd said, you know, let's get some more multicultural characters going so that you can keep the audience. Because if you keep going white boy stuff, that's going to be falling off in a minute.
Oh, okay. Can I take this one? Here is the problem, and it's an argument I had since we began this show, okay? Every time the black community, all right, the black community nerd-wise and everything like that says, you know what, we would like to see visions of us up there. We want to see visions of us up there. All right. That's cool. And then you go and see the film or whatever, and the very same people that argue you want to see this, you want to see us up there, will not support the film. I don't know who that is. I don't know. It's a diabolical catch-22, because you're stuck in the rut that you've never seen heroes that look like us up there. But at the same time, when there's heroes or proposed heroes looking like us going to be up there, all of a sudden the community pulls their support. Or no real black man does a sci-fi. No real black woman does a sci-fi film. What happened to the street? What happened to being real? I hear all of those excuses, but it's a double-faced like catch-22 too. I have no other way of phrasing it. But we ask, we crave. And then when it's presented to us, we get stuff like Zoe Saldana getting attacked for being on Star Trek. And at the same time, getting attacked to, oh, she's too light to be Nina Simone. You know, we get that sort of stuff. We ask, we beg, we plead. But then when we get it, we're too overly critical, or we won't support it, or, you know, or we attack it without seeing it. And, you know, and thank you, man, because this is the perfect lead-in, because this is going to be the same argument I'm going to use against my fellow sci-fi and fantasy nerds when we get to the Doctor Who segment. Because we are so rash to make a judgment, we kill these platforms before they ever get off the ground. Afro nerd?
Okay. All right. Fire.
Yeah. Well, this is the deal, Kim. And again, I'm really happy that, because I know you're more into the Afro nerd thing, but this show is equally interesting. If you get into what we're talking about and start to read some of these books, it's really, really fascinating. And also, we need to be in every genre. Just as some folks might have a problem with me being a conservative, you need a black conservative. You need a black sci-fi geek. You need a black guy at the Comic-Con. Hell, in 2 or 3 weeks, Dallas is probably going to be with me at some point. We'll probably run into each other at Afropunk. There are going to be thousands of black folks, not like the stereotype, at a hip-hop concert, because this is not a hip-hop thing. So, you know, no one, for whatever reason, there seems to be a drive, an equal force, and that Daryl was intimating this, an equal force that we talk about change and we're not a monolith and we have to do all these different things, but then when you start to explore these different things, then you'll get critiqued for it. You know, it must have been a hard road for someone like Prince or Lenny Kravitz or Fishbone or Living Color, for those gentlemen to do what they're doing. I think there's a young group that we've mentioned before. I think it's called Uncovering the Truth. Daryl, these young cats in Flatbush. 12-year-old, 13-year-old guys in the middle of Times Square from Flatbush that can shred guitars as a heavy metal band.
Excellent.
And they get, and I'm pretty sure they catch hell from their grade school colleagues because they don't understand, because they're not doing what black folks are, quote-unquote, supposed to be doing. But I will say this, and I don't think our crew will take complete credit, but maybe some. I think there's a seed of Afro-nerdism. A seed of the comic shop is starting to permeate our culture, a seed. Because everything, trust me on this, everything has a saturation point. And I just feel that there's just – the reason why Barack Obama is sitting in the White House right now is because there was a saturation point. You just can't continue doing the same old thing over and over and over again. Just like these cats that wear their pants sagging. 20 years on this thing. At some point, there's got to be – I mean, this is – I'm melding into Afro-nerdisms. But at some point, there's got to be – you know what? Let's clean up our act. Let's do something different and see what happens. But as far as the difficulty in getting these projects off the ground, it's going to be a slow ride. But I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I think things are going to start changing. Ultimately, we're going to have to start seeing some people biting the bullet. I mean, heck, if we have time, we'll talk about Russell Simmons. I'll probably reach out to try to get Russell Simmons. I mean, Russell Simmons has contacted the show before, but he's a difficult guy to kind of bolt down. But he has this Harlem Shadow project, and it's an animated project that seems kind of interesting, although the Harlem Shadow is essentially the Black Shadow. So we'll talk about that. We have a few moments to spare. He's going to be at Comic-Con as well, New York Comic-Con, I'm hearing. So, you know, him in Common, it sounds cool, jazz era, a pulp hero that's black in Harlem during the 30s and 40s. It sounds damn cool. I'm not comfortable with Simmons being behind it, but hey, you know, I would ask him, maybe you might want to dip your toe a little further into this groove, because the day of the minstrel is dead. That's what I would say to him. But, you know, I don't know. He's a multimillionaire. He's made his bread off of minstrelsy. Kim, I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to go to a quick Nerdcore groove. When we get back, we're going to talk about this. I might bring Kim back in, Captain, because I want her to participate in the Doctor Who segment, because she seems to be very passionate about that. Because the Doctor Who thing, Black Batman, is it's kind of a sort of the same thing. So
he hit
quickly,
a nerve. He hit a nerve.
Let's go back to Magneto was right. Adam Warrock. We'll be back in a few moments. Be back in two. Hold on. Let's groove. Magneto was right, the great Adam Warrock. Folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of the Comic Shop. Afternoon Radio is coming back at you at 7 p.m. The call-in number once again, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Of course, we have Kim from Chi-Town, our friend, and I know she normally is an Afternerd person, Afternoon Radio follower, but the Comic Shop is equally as interesting, believe it or not. It's not a bad thing to align yourself with this fantasy nerd sci-fi stuff. There is a method to the madness, believe it or not. It's all about imagery at the end of the day. And I really would implore, especially parents, to really have their kids to read this stuff because there's a lot of allegory, a lot of analogies. It's a lot deeper than what you might think. Even with the X-Men really was an allegory for the civil rights movement. Magneto represents Malcolm X, and Professor X represents Dr. King. Believe it or not, the mutants are oppressed people because of who they are and what they look like. And the series came about in the early 60s, I believe 63, when the X-Men came about, which was at the apex of the civil rights movement. So these books mean a whole lot more than just people in goofy spandex. Believe it or not. All right. So, getting back into the fold, now we seem to be on this image kick. Well, we always are, by and large. But, you know, we might have hinted at this before. I was kind of unaware of this political element to Doctor Who. I'm not a Doctor Who guy yet. I'm slowly going there. I'm slowly going to make this trek up the Himalayas, Daryl. And it is the Himalayas because it's 50 years of history. 50 years. I have a little OCD, I think, because I can't. I'm starting actually. I think at maybe last year's series. I'm starting to get into it, but it's daunting. The series began in 1963, and they do make references to old stuff, old doctors. In a nutshell, it's a UK sci-fi series. So the UK people know I'm an Anglophile. So that's another thing that's pulling me in, and it is a staple. It is a British staple, the sci-fi series. It's 50 years of age. It's not going anywhere. It is almost as embedded as the Queen, I suspect. You listen to the fans, British fans, girls, young boys, adults. You're talking about many generations that grew up on this thing now. So what I did not know, out of curiosity, even though I didn't know that much about Doctor Who, I knew he was white. That much I knew. So I said, okay, it's a 50-year-old franchise. Let me Google Black Doctor Who for S and Giggles. For S and Giggles. You know, this is a G-rated show, so or PG. So for S and Giggles, let me put in Black Doctor Who. Lo and behold, about 2 or 3 months ago, this was a topic of conversation. And there was some blowback on this thing. But from my understanding, my understanding, you had some folks from the British Hollywood elite that were about this. Helen Mirren, who is a phenomenal actress, she said, "Hey, I think it's about time. Let's have a black gay female Doctor Who for S and Giggles. Why not? Put some juices might be flowing." She was campaigning for that. I believe. Someone else, I think actually the actor that ended up getting the role, Capaldi, Daryl, I think even he was kind of into the idea before he got the role. And as a case of irony, he was Doctor Who before he was Doctor Who. What do I mean by that? This is only an Afro nerd, or only the nerds pay attention to stuff like this. In World War Z, Capaldi played his character in World War Z was the doctor of the World Health Organization. So people are saying, wait a minute, he was already a Doctor Who before he got the role. That's just an anecdotal thing. What's the deal here? Why the blowback on this? I mean, I guess we already know, but it's 50 years. The guy regenerates. Just real quick to the audience, this character, he's a time traveler, and he always regenerates. That's the hook of the show. I guess after 5 or 6 years, the character regenerates, and it's a plot device to essentially bring in a new guy, sometimes younger, sometimes older, but always white. But he regenerates. So this time, last season, there was a regeneration process, and lo and behold, you have Mr. Capaldi is now the new
doctor. Not yet. Matt Smith is still the doctor. All right. It has not happened yet. It's going to happen.
They've already said who was going to be.
Yeah, it's upcoming. The his regeneration. The story is yet to be told, but with the next season, it's going to be Capaldi in the role. All right. Here, and this is why my ire is up. Okay. I have seen a lot of weird things in sci-fi and fantasy. I have seen stuff that's gone against my moral code, but turned out to be interesting. I've seen stuff that was interesting, but I've rejected because it was against my moral code, both ends of the spectrum. But never, ever does anything get my anger up than hearing for proposals and ideas. We could have a woman. And truth be told, for Benefit in 2009, we did get a woman doctor, Joan Lumley, for it was a comedic skit, but they had a doctor who facsimile go through many different conversions at once, and one of them ended up being a woman. So that is possible, right? And another myth, but it's been recent release. Chet Elfor was actually offered the role of Doctor Who before Matt Smith, all right? But things didn't work out there. So we could have had a black doctor also. So my problem isn't really with the BBC and their production house. My problem's with the fans.
Mm.
How the hell, okay, excuse me, with PG, how the heck, or H-E-double hockey sticks, can you have a character that has traveled to such fantastic locations, been in such fantastical situations, been in stuff that, in the words of Ernie Hudson from the Immortal Ghostbusters, seen as that can make your turn white, and you get off on that, but let somebody propose, let it be a gay character, or for this once, let it be a woman. Or for once, how about an Asian? Or for once, let it be a black person. You know, in the role. You know? And to say they attack this with venom is underscoring it. People, you heard me get mad at some of the responses to Donald Glover wanting to be Spider-Man. Some of these Doctor Who things, responses, honestly, I reached a point where I'm a Doctor Who geek. I couldn't watch an episode last week. I could not. I could not. I have all the episodes from all on. Doctor Who and Star Trek. There's never been a week, all right, since in my 37 years of living on this planet, all right, well, let's just say 30 years that I can recall, where I haven't watched a Doctor Who and a Star Trek episode in that week since I've been on this planet. I'll say it like that. I've seen it in some form, some fashion. Last week, I can honestly say I got so turned off by Doctor Who fans because of this that I did not watch a Doctor Who episode. No Tom Baker, no Christopher Eccleston, no David Tennant, no Peter. No, you know, I just went, you know what, screw it. No, I can't watch it. Because once I watch it, I'm going to get pissed again. And if I get pissed, then that ruins my day. I don't understand. And again, it's not to say that you're locked into a set thing because he's an alien. It's just some of these fans and their venom. And when you approach him with rationality about, well, he could transform into anything, you know, why can't he? And he's always been like, wait a second, he could transform into anything. Matter of fact, one of his famous lines with each transformation is he really wants red hair. And so after the transformation, he'll look at his hair and go, hey, I'm still not ginger, to put into people's minds that when he changes, he can literally change it to anything, but he can't change it to what he wants. You know, he can't control the change. But again, like I said, and I'm sorry for taking up so much time here, but it's just the fact of the matter that why are sci-fi fans so ignorant? Why are they so closed-minded? Take a chance for once. It's fantasy. You could go out on that whim and do anything. But propose a little change. Oh, no. No, we can't have that. We can't have that. If the story's written good, you can't have that. It's still the same character. Anyway, back to you, Afro Nerd.
Captain, what are your thoughts? I want to say something quickly, but are your board still up, Captain? Are you still up or you're not?
No, the board is not up. Florida's not.
All right, so I'll take care of, you know, how we segue going out. I'll take care of that. All right, so what are your thoughts on this?
Well, the fans at times are rather primitive, and they're not so much – they're somewhat emotionally attached to the series, but a lot of times when you have the primitive mind state, you're really extremely emotionally attached to images. And that's where the venom comes from a lot of times with these primitive individuals. That's what you see with all the internet, with all the things. Oh, they got to keep it this way. They got to keep it that way. Yes, they're emotionally attached to the series, but they're extremely emotionally attached to the imagery a lot of times. And that's where you get the primitive responses that you see all over the internet at times from these individuals. And that's all I wanted to say. So I'm totally agree with Daryl B. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate Daryl's passion, and I'm somewhere there with him. But, you know, I said last week that sometimes you're going to have to be prepared to invert your arguments. And if the argument is inverted, and if it doesn't make any sense, then it means you have to go back to the to the drawing board. Now, you mentioned yourself, Daryl, this whole deal with Zoe Saldana portraying the great Nina Simone. She is not a fair complexed Latina. She's a brown skinned Latina, but she's not as dark chocolate as the great Nina Simone. And her features aren't as pronounced as Nina Simone. For some reason, and also she's a Latina, a Latina of African descent. When I first heard that she got the role, I was all great. You know, I didn't go that deep into it, but it became political, and people said, "Well, she doesn't look black enough, quote unquote, for the role." Now, the reality is that we're dealing with finance and what people bring to the role and how people can carry a movie. If you had got an actress that looked more closely like Nina Simone and was an unknown, the movie would go nowhere. The controversy, her name recognition, we might be able to get someone to see. And even then, a Nina Simone movie. Because Nina Simone was not Rihanna. This was a real talented songstress. And I guess I'm appreciative that someone decided to put some backing behind the concept of even doing a Nina Simone story. That's kind of an inverted argument. We will see these things turn on their heads now. If we ever see a Black Panther film, a white person will tell you, and I've seen it already, well, what if we made him a white guy? Black folks would have a conniption. Now, we know full well that the Black Panther is called the Black Panther, but it's not like in mythology that there has not been a white Black Panther, because there has been. He has not to go too nerdy on you, but that he has an adopted white brother in that village. And I think he was made the White Tiger, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Daryl?
Yeah.
Okay, and then there was a lighter-complected black man that assumed the role of the Panther. And even that was treated a certain way in the mythology, that he was African-American, biracial. T'Challa had relinquished, I think he was dying or something. I had to revisit that storyline. But you had, let's say, a Shamar Moore type that became the Black Panther, which is not a bad, now that I look and think about it, it might be a good idea. But anyway, you know, we're going to have to deal with these arguments that are thrown right back at us. These folks grew up with these things. My only thing is, if it's plausible, it can be explored. Heck, what happened when we saw Idris Elba as the quote-unquote Heimdall, the white god? In Norse mythology, he's literally referred to as the white god. But you had Idris Elba portray him, and those who are on the religious side of this issue, you have people who worship Thor and Odin and are deep into Norse mythology. They took it as a personal affront. And then, of course, you had the racists that worship whiteness. They hated the fact that the white god was portrayed by a black guy. Very problematic. We're going to see some changes, hopefully. But it's going to be a fight, always. But it makes for an interesting discourse. My only thing, at the end of the day, I want black folks to start to invest in their own imagery. Because the imagery that we do seem to invest in rather masterfully and with great frequency is that of the minstrel. The minstrel, just like the post office, there's always work there. And that's what's a problem for me. We never have difficulties when it comes to casting for cooneries, for coons, excuse me, neo-coons. We can go back to the 1830s, we can go back to the 1930s, and in 2013, we still seem to have the Stephen Fetchert, Burt Williams archetype. Why? Daryl, go ahead.
Afro-nerd?
Yes.
Oh, Kim?
Yeah, this is Kim. I wanted to just make a comment about the Doctor Who, because I'm always when you have things that are 50 years old, if they can't take a chance and use a black person and get the flack, but people will probably still be there because it's ingrained in them, then, you know, it's kind of hard for a new show to come out and do that. So Doctor Who, they should have enough foundation to be able to take a chance like that.
Absolutely.
Well, but the whole thing is, listen, from a nerd perspective, it makes sense if the mythology can cover it up. The character is always changing. They've allowed a plot device for a change of an actor every 5 or 6 or 7 years. That's part of the Doctor Who. They've accepted that. Okay? That lineage from 1963 is actually part of the mythology. So he's always changing. Always he goes into a telephone booth or whatever, and he regenerates. He changes. Changing into a black guy, they can't seem to go that far in fantasy. As long as it makes sense, I don't have an issue with it. It actually makes sense that after 50 years of regenerating, you might want to change into a black guy or a woman. I'm just saying. It is what it is. All right, folks, listen, we got about 2 minutes remaining. Any closing thoughts before we go next door for Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk? We're going to revisit this again, sort of, for the other show anyway.
So I won't be around for them, unfortunately. I'm checking out a War Rock performing here in the area. But I will say this. When you're using your "why can't Batman be black" arguments, I'm sure you guys are going to bring up Night Thrasher and Shadowhawk, which is two examples of the archetype that could work. The problem is, I think it's a social thing as well as a race thing. You know, it'll be like a black man with money, he won't do that, or black, you know, that's part of the problem. That's your lead in for that.
Listen, a black billionaires, and you know who I'm talking about, a black billionaires,
yes. Yes.
Could not buy a measly $38,000 bag, Tom Ford bag, in Zurich.
That's only something would harm in Europe. Remember the France incident, all right?
Yes.
I'm just saying, there's something right there. Hey, Oprah, you don't need to take your money over there anymore. Make them beg.
Well, it's already going down that way. We might have to we'll glance over it in the next segment. Dow, as always, man, very
good
insightful,
luck,
very passionate. Keep it up. We're going to go next
Tim,
door,
thanks
folks.
For coming
Hold
in.
On. Hold on. We're going next door after a featuring Captain Kirk coming up next.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
We'll be right back.
How many of you are familiar with the Chris Rock routine? Very good. Okay.
How come Chris Rock can do a routine and everybody finds it hilarious and groundbreaking, and then I go and do the exact same routine, same comedic timing, and people file a complaint to corporate? Is it because I'm white and Chris is black?
So we're going to reenact this with a more positive outcome.
I will play the Chris Rock guy. I would like to see someone else pull this off.
Well, let's have someone who wasn't involved in the reenactment.
Okay, I will play Guy Listening.
Great, Guy Listening. Okay, anyone else remember?
I remember.
Great. You're the Chris Rock guy, and you're Guy Listening.
Okay. Kevin is a great guy. He's a great accountant. He is not much of an entertainer.
Basically, there are two types of black people. And black people are actually more racist because they hate the other type of black people. See, every time the one type wants to have a good time, then the other type comes in and makes a real mess.
I'm sorry. He's butchering it. Could you just let me? Every time black people want to have a good time, some ignorant ass. I take care of my kids.
Always want credit for something they're supposed to do.
What you want, cookie?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Pork. Who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funky lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deepak, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Oh, my God, ladies and gentlemen, that was completely ridiculous. That was the great Steve Carell from The Office channeling Chris Rock's routine. You have to see the visuals on that, actually, but I thought it was rather entertaining, him trying to interpret it. A definite PC moment. It is what it is. I thought it was pretty humorous, something to change up the scenarios for our intro. So, again, that was Steve Carell, The Office. Folks, this is the second half. This is AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. AfroNerd Radio, folks. Once again, I want to thank Daryl B. for his contribution for the comic shop. Now we're in the second half, folks. We're going to go to a quick urban alternative groove. When we get back, we have a lot to get into for the hour. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Feel free to jump on in. The water is warm, percolating warm. This is the James Hunter 6. Look out. Bit of revisionist, I guess you would call them revisionist or revivalist R&B, revivalist R&B. The James Hunter 6, look out. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
I said they got no pain. They rob you blind, and then they take your pain. Hey, look out, brother, you better take cover. Ain't got you one way, you got to get another. They can't get away with it every time, because I got the other man. If you was mine,
Doing that, but we have a show to get to. Once again, folks, that's the James Hunter Trio. Look out for them, by the way. And of course, we have the captain waiting in abeyance. I'm just going to make sure that he's dematerialized. We're going to get away from all the histrionics because we're on a schedule. So we're just going to beam him on in.
Record was funky, man. Cool, man. Funky music right there.
Good hey, listen, that's our background music. We're funky and cool. We're Afro nerds, but we still can't stop from being cool and funky. The discourse is heavy. The music's got to match that, Captain. You know that. James Hunter's another group to look out for. I believe Daryl B is going to be at Afropunk just like I will be August 24th and August 25th. And there's a group that's very similar sounding called Vintage Trouble. Great minds think alike, speaking to the Oracle. The very day that I started to get Vintage Trouble music, the Oracle says, hey, have you heard about this group called Vintage Trouble? Yeah. just so happened. So it's funny how these things start to come around full circle. So I think I might have some Vintage Trouble music coming up next. But Vintage Trouble, James Hunter, a lot of guys, a lot of young women that can do it. Folks, again, AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk, call in number 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I want to try to clean up or readdress some things that we tapped into for the Midweek in Review show. Two young scholars attending Yale and Harvard, respectively. They are to be applauded. They're Mississippians going against the odds, coming from single-parent homes, and they did the damn thing, as they say. And it makes you wonder, why isn't this being replicated? Again, coming from single-parent homes, but the component between the two, and these two happen to be friends. They're friends, Mississippians, single-parent homes, men of color, young men of color, going to Ivy League institutions, and yet they defy the odds, but when you go into the internal workings, ladies and gentlemen, you start to see, you know what? They came from meager beginnings, meager means, but they had parents, or I should say, well, parents, you know, both mothers, who focused, Captain. We're being told over and over again, even Don Lemon, CNN's Don Lemon, is being told over and over again, you can't do it, you can't do it. The liberals are telling him, his fellow liberals are saying, you can't tell black people it's that simple. I don't, what's going on here? As I find the clip, what's going on where these folks come from the backgrounds that we critique, they did it a different way, lo and behold, they came up with a different result. What's up with that?
Well, that's what the liberals do. It's following their trope, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as they're concerned. That's what they do in the grand scheme of things. you know? They just feel that you cannot tell black people anything. You can't tell them the pros. You can't tell them the cons. Just let them be. Give them programs, give them programs, give them programs, and everything will work out. Right? Yeah, okay. All right. That's the liberal agenda. That's what it is, you know? So when it comes to that.
It's very scary. It's very scary, isn't it, Captain?
Well, it's beyond that. It's beyond scary. You know? It's totally beyond scary. It's insanely scary. Put the insane element with the scary in there. It's totally insane. It starts with yourself. You have to do something. In order for you to get money, normally you have to work. So you have to make the right work. That's just what it is. You have to do some form of work in order to get anywhere. So there's something that you're going to have to do. You have to do some form of exacting change in order to get to the point that you want to get to. It's real simple. That's simple what I just said right there. And obviously, on the grand scale, what we're doing as a people is not working. So there needs to be a paradigm shift in the work that we do. That sounds like an oxymoron because they'll say a lot of us do not want to do any work. They just want a handout. That's a whole other story that's just by the by. There needs to be a paradigm shift in the type of work, our drive and determination in order to get to our goals. That's all. Have you found the clip, sir?
Yeah. Let's go to the clip for a few moments. It's rather lengthy. We'll try to get through maybe some of it, maybe a third of it. We'll talk about it, and then we'll go into something that disturbed me from another podcast, and it has a Chappelle Show connection. We'll get to that in a moment. let's give these gentlemen their due. This would be a continuation of the Blue Area segment. Hold on one moment. The two gentlemen from Mississippi who are in the Ivy League. Hold on, folks.
August is the month when many of our nests turn empty as American kids go off to college for the first time. Most incoming freshmen are filled with excitement and high hopes and at least a little bit of anxiety about making new friends, while their parents feel a mix of sadness and joy that's always a part of these great transitional moments. And, of course, the parents feel a great deal of anxiety about how to pay for college. But some kids have worries that most of us never experience. What is it like to go off to Harvard and worry that your mother might not be able to make it economically if you don't stay home and go to a local college and get a job to help her out? How does it feel when you're at the airport going off to Yale and your eyes fill with tears because you can't find the words to thank your single mother for everything she did to make this happen since the day she gave birth to you at age 15? Both of those stories were told in yesterday's New York Times by Justin Porter, who will soon be a sophomore at Harvard, and Travis Reginald, who will soon be a sophomore at Yale. They are important stories on many, many levels, including helping us understand the troubling finding in a recent study showing that most low-income students who have top SAT scores do not apply to America's top colleges, while 78% of students with similar test scores and higher incomes apply and get accepted at those colleges. Joining me now, Yale sophomore Travis Reginald, the son of Nikki Reginald, and Harvard sophomore Justin Porter, the son of Sarah Perkins. Justin, I want to read a line from your article yesterday in the Times where you said you were born and raised 1,500 miles away from Harvard in a small apartment in Jackson, Mississippi, with your mother, and it was just the two of you. What was it like to have to say goodbye to her and go that far away to college?
It was excruciating in some regards, just because it was a very I felt very torn, you know. Like, there's obviously, like, the immense opportunity that was ahead, but, like, my mom never likes to let me know, like, her emotions, you know, how she's feeling about letting me go. But she had this this kind of absent stare in her eyes as she saw me walking off, you know. Like, I started taking off my shoes, putting them in the bin for, like, you know, to get on the plane. And then I just broke down. Because, I mean, I realized that I can't come home for the weekend. I can't check in to see how she's doing. I can't physically be there. So it was definitely a difficult decision. One that I ruminated over for the entire course of the year, really.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's a rather lengthy clip, and we do want to respect the gentlemen and what their accomplishments, but we also have a more show to get into. Again, that's Mr. Porter and Mr. Reginald from Mississippi, and both gentlemen have articles available at the NewYorkTimes.com, so I would implore our listenership, I would advise our listenership to simply Google Justin Porter and Mr. Reginald. Like, I don't have his first name, but Google them, and their story is a fascinating one. I want to read one quick blurb from Mr. Porter's article, Justin Porter's article, because he says something that really says it all. Let me go into what, I guess, the preface of the article, and then I'm going to go into his own words. Travis Reginald is his friend. Travis Reginald and Justin Porter were friends back in Jackson, Mississippi. They attended William B. Murrah High School, which is 97% African-American and 67% low-income. Murrah is no Ivy feeder. Low-income students rarely apply to the nation's best colleges, but Mr. Porter just completed a first year at Harvard. Mr. Reginald, at Yale. Below, Mr. Porter writes about his journey, and I want to read one quick thing here, and it really says it all, and we're led to believe by the folks that have been lambasting Mr. Lemon that these small measures don't make a difference. Okay, my blood is already boiling as I'm saying this, folks. My mouth is starting to froth. This is what Mr. Porter is saying. I am an only child, so my mother overpowered me with her love. For someone who sees so much beauty in the world, she worked awfully hard to protect me from it. Television, rap music, even basketball with the kids on the block were beyond consideration. It left me a bit resentful as a teenager, but I grew to appreciate her enormous sacrifices, walking me to the library every afternoon, laboring at multiple jobs to keep food on the table, telling me stories late into the night. When I announced the summer before my senior year of high school that I had decided to apply to a school in New England, I noticed a hint of hesitation before a warm smile enveloped her face. I pretended not to see, but I was never able to forget it. I tried to articulate my reasons for wanting to leave to prove I was smart enough, fear of taking the path of least resistance, the classic teenage feeling of being trapped, but the words just made me sound shallow and ungrateful. All right, the bottom line here is you are seeing, and I referenced this last time, the last Midweek in Review show, and I've referenced it probably many shows before this, Captain. This is the Tiger Mom African-American style. Amy Chua, who we also reached out before, maybe I will try again. Amy Chua, a law professor, I believe she's a law professor at one of the Ivy League schools, maybe Yale, I think. Her book talks about Asian culture, but she also said there are West Indian China Tiger Moms, there are Irish Tiger Moms, there are Tiger Moms of all types of every hue and ethnicity. But the key component here is it says here this woman is not a rich woman. She worked hard. There was no husband there, meager means, but they focused. They stayed away from the rap music. They stayed away from the memes, ladies and gentlemen. But you see Dr. Michael Eric Dyson. You see Reverend Al Sharpton. You see the whole crew, the whole victimization crew coming in, giving you the impression that to focus on some of these issues that they try to say are too simplistic is a wrong. I don't think so. This young man is proving this, and it seems very clear that he went against the trope. He went against the mean. He defied the means that promote failure. You go to World Star Hip Hop, it is a clear promotion of failure. You stay away from it, you focus, even with meager means, you can still make it. That's all. They are to be applauded. Captain, any thoughts?
Well, some would say, and this is actually what it is, this is the exception, because environment, it's DNA and the environment that makes you who you are. So when the father's not in the household, the environment radically changes. These households were able to pick it up, step it up, despite the fact the father was not there. That's what needs to be understood. You see, when the father is there, the environment is different. It's not the end all and be all. There still has to be a lot of work. But it's all about the environment and the children's DNA. That's what makes you who you are. You need the right environment to bring out whatever you are at the DNA level. So here, in this case, the mothers were able to step it up via the work, via the ideology, via the system, via the means that were passed on in the household. So at this given point, they have a very good product. So hence, in the black culture at this given time, not everybody, but a lot of us, the environment is affecting a lot of us at the DNA level. So you turn into this gormless, feral, menstrual beast that's walking around. This is what's happening. But you can exact change if you get the memo. That's all. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd.
Yeah, we always talk about, Captain, the idea of the, you just said it. Why can't I think of what you just said? About, you know what, I forgot. the exception. No, the exception versus the rule.
Yes, okay.
The exception, and that is a thing. There's the exception, and then there's the rule. This may be the exception. The only thing, now normally I really wouldn't belabor the exception. In this case, though, you see that they did some things that seem to ensure success. That when they start getting into the numbers game, because it's all about numbers, even with having coming from a two-parent home, it's all about numbers. Mathematics shows that if you come from a certain economic background, if you come from a certain region of the country, if you know, your schooling, your parents' schooling, all that factors into it. However, when you see in this case, when they still do the numbers and they say, well, in these urban centers and single-parent homes, oftentimes there aren't any books around. There's no books. There's so many things that are there, even on a base level, that are not there on a base level, that really lead to a deleterious effect. In this case, this woman kept the nonsense away, kept him away from the nonsense, kept him away from the failure, the failure promoters, took him to the library, where she crafted a scholarly young man. She had insight herself. Unfortunately, many of these young black and brown women do not have the insight to know. You have to have books in the house. In the African household, growing up, there was nothing but there was books. I don't remember not having a book. In my father's barbershop, as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, I was always reading. Always reading. Just never could not put a book down. And on the other side of the fence, a similarly hued black male or female, the books aren't there. There's certain things we have to do culturally. These folks that will tell you, sell you the victim thing. They don't want to deal with this stuff for some reason. I don't understand what the problem is. We can't stay stuck in the Elmer's glue. We can't stay stuck in the glue with this belief that we can't make it, we're all victims, without dealing with some things that really aren't about money. There are poor Asian folks that will tell you the same thing. There was a recent graduate of Asian descent, high school graduate, who was accepted at he was accepted at every Ivy League school. No father, on public assistance, mother trying to make it. Same thing as these black mothers, except he was of Asian descent. He still made it. So, yes, we're looking at we're looking at certain things within our culture, certain facts, but there's some things we can do. There are some things we can do that we're not doing culturally. And if you bring it up, it's a no-no. It's a no-no. I don't get it, folks. I don't get it. All right.
Can I get my Don?
Yes, sir.
Can I get my Don Lemon on right now?
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to get my Don Lemon on. Now, listen, these are some of the things that all of us can do, regardless of the situation, I would say 90% of the time. And I'm talking to the black males. One, you can go get a driver's license. You control that reality. You control that. Powers that be do not control that. Next, my friend, you can go get a bank account. You can put $20. $20 gets you a bank account. It's better to have $100,000, of course, but at least you get started. Next, you can get a high school diploma. You know why? Because high school in this country, provided you show up and you go, you can get it. It's actually easy. The GED, you have to apply yourself a little bit. It's not the end-all and be-all, my friends. It's not the end-all and be-all. It's better to have a doctorate than a high school diploma, but it allows you to get in the game. It allows you to start, at least touch the field, and say, I can compete. There's a certain segment of individuals out there that do not even have that. So if you do not even have that, at least, you cannot compete based on this system. What is the system? The system is that chances are you are going to work for somebody. And when you're going to work for somebody, the more educated you are, the better off you will be. You will need a driver's license. You will also need a bank account, too. So if you do not at least have these things, you're not in a position to compete in no way, shape, and form. This is my minor version of the Don Lemon. And while you're at it, pull the pants up. Because when you come for a job, if your pants are sagging and you have a do-rag on and 13 and 14 tattoos, no one's going to hire you. You just negated your high school diploma. You just negated your driver's license. You just negated your bank account. Thank you very much. I got my Don Lemon on. If you do not like what I said, you can email us. There you go. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. 646-915-9620. Back over to the great Afro Nerd.
Okay, quickly. You know, I referenced a clip with Chris Rock during his HBO show, Chris Rock Show, where he was interviewing Reverend Jesse Jackson. And I played it as an intro before. I want to play this quickly. And also, before I even get to that, you know, I mentioned this last week, Captain. I mentioned it when you talked about the pants sagging, that when I worked for an investment research firm, the CEO of the firm, and this is obviously I'm hallucinating. So the folks that tell me that will tell us this doesn't happen, I was there. I had to do it. A gentleman, black gentleman, came in, pants were sagging, just was not ready on site. The CEO says, "Hey, interview this guy, humor him, but get his ass out of here." It was humor him. On site. But the victimization crew will tell you this isn't a true story, but it's a true story because I was there. I participated in it. I was told, humor the man. And I did. But I looked at him, I said, you can't be serious. You can't be serious. It is what it is. Now, Chris Rock versus Reggie Jackson. Pardon me. I like Reggie a little bit better than Reverend Jesse Jackson. Pay close attention, ladies and gentlemen, to how Reverend Jackson reacts to Chris Rock's questioning. Chris Rock is a comedian, has an acerbic wit, but there's a lot of reality in his questioning that deserves a real response, and you're not getting it. You're not getting it, and this was, I don't know, maybe 14, 15 years ago. It really explains why we haven't moved anywhere. Theoretically, we haven't moved anywhere. Why we're stuck in the glue culturally. When we're questioned, when we question, I should say, the current quote-unquote leadership, you're not going to get a response about something that's legitimate. Pay attention to what he's asking. I think it's very fit. Very Don Lemon-esque, by the way. Very Don Lemon-esque. Hold on.
We were just talking backstage, and you want me to get more involved. I'm like, yeah, let's clean up the damn hood. Black people and white people, poor black people and poor white people live in the same conditions. Only thing, black people paint on their houses.
It's free advertising. But, you know, I think the point is people...
If we straighten out ourselves, people would deal with us as human beings. Don't you agree? A little bit?
Well, if your kid
wants something and his room is dirty, you say, get back and clean up your room. Then tell me what you want.
Cleanliness is always close to godliness. There's no question about that.
Yes, thank you.
But if you live in a certain area of town where they cut off access to capital...
Yes.
And cut off access to
and
jobs.
Don't mean
and
you can't pick up a damn piece of paper in front of your house.
But
and
pick
don't
it,
mean that.
But pick it up.
My mother used to make me clean up my yard and the 2 yards next door to her.
But I think it's important. You should be to pick up paper and pick up a paycheck. Pick up paper
we
and pick
broke,
up a plumber.
And we still picked up the paper. My daddy was on strike and I'm out there sweeping away, man.
Well, my grandmother used to make us clean the dirt with a brush broom. Having said that, even that is no substitute for the right to an education,
a job, and healthcare. Right, but we got to get on our own stuff a little bit.
Well,
we got to smack our own kids upside the head every now and then. Yo. That's it. Thank you very much.
Yuck. That's your Reverend Jackson, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I thought that Chris was pretty, he was hitting it pretty, you know, hey, we might be able to get somewhere. People might deal with us a little differently if we cut out the nonsense. And your Reverend Jesse Jackson, just as what he did with President Barack Obama when he wanted to take off his manhood, you can't. He interprets it as talking down to black people. This is your leadership. This is your leadership. And you wonder why you're stuck in the glue. Catherine, what do you think about that exchange? It's quite telling. Quite telling
for comedy.
Not so funny.
As they would say on the street, Chris Rock laced him. He won that battle. If it was a rap battle, Chris Rock was the obvious winner in that. It's what he's saying is common sense. You clean up your room, then you clean up the rest of the house. You clean up in front of your yard, then we'll worry about across the street. Do for self. Take care of the things. Control your personal space is what we've been saying here also. Of course, Chris Rock definitely said it also. You have to control your own space. And as I said, during slavery, the black man never controlled his own personal space. He couldn't. He was a slave. He couldn't. It's about... in the modern day era, 2013, going forward as an individual, control your own space, and then you link into others doing the same thing, then you can make it a movement. But if you do not control your own space, if you do not do that, the things that you can control, just as I mentioned before when I said with the Don Lemon situation, if you're not at least doing that, and that's called cleaning up your own yard, my friends, that's all that is. From a statistical standpoint, it shows those people that do at least that, they can move on to be more successful. You go into other chambers. That's just the start. That's not the end all and be all, what I outlined. That's just the start. Let's not confuse it. But you have to clean up It's like clean up in front of your house. It's not the end all and be all. You clean up your house, your neighbor's doing the same thing. Then you look down the block and say, okay, everybody clean up over here. Let's get going on the next block. But before you can get going on the next block, you have to clean up your own house and clean up your own block. It's real simple. It's real simple. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afflinger.
All right, let's go to a quick groove. I mentioned Vintage Trouble, so it would be apropos that I would play them, and luckily I found a clip. This is Vintage Trouble, Still and Always Will. More revivalist R&B, actually, on the Urban Alternative station, Urban Alternative Music Show. Again, Vintage Trouble, Still and Always Will, and folks will be right back, and again, let's groove.
Stumbled across me,
folks, once again, give you the best of Urban Alternative Groove. That is Still and Always Will, Vintage Trouble. Really check for them. Really check for them. They have a whole host of videos on YouTube. Get their album. Why am I saying album? I guess I'm dated. Get their MP3 file. Get their download, what have you. Really a terrific group. Vintage Trouble, James Hunter 6. And actually, another one to look out for, Valerie June. Valerie June is another one. Phenomenal, kind of a new blues artist, new bluesy female singer, Valerie June. All right, back into the fold, folks. This is the Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. As our audience probably knows, I listen to a whole lot of other podcasts to kind of feel what's out there. And I like listening to radio in all forms. I like listening to discussions, especially good ones. But on occasion, I will listen to a comedic podcast. And what I heard was troubling. And it's somewhat endemic to what we were discussing with in the last segment, as far as memes, as far as how certain households conduct themselves. So I'm listening to Neil Brennan's The Champs podcast. Neil Brennan's The Champs. Now, the hook of The Champs podcast is you have two white guys, Neil Brennan being one of them. Neil Brennan, if you're familiar with that name, Neil was a collaborator slash colleague slash co-writer, co-producer of The Chappelle Show. So he has somewhat of a acerbic wit. He's a comedian in his own right. And I think Dave Chappelle and Mr. Brennan had some rift, probably because of the $50 million payday that they relinquished. I wouldn't doubt it's something to do with that. I think they've somewhat mended their ways. So I think Dave Chappelle is trying to come back into the fold, so maybe we might see these two together. Anyway, the hook of the Champ podcast is that he mainly interviews people of color. Rarely does he have a white guest. And I think it's because he is entrenched in black culture. But there's a downside to that, because some things are not interpreted the way I think they should be. Maybe it's just my opinion, but for instance, he has a belief that when he speaks to some of these black folk that come from a lower tier mindset. Now, some of these folks are wealthy now, but they have a lower tier mindset. And because they are successful, he feels that if these black folk have come into contact with a white person, that explains why their trajectory changed. Like early on, let's say in their childhood, formative years, even educational-wise, he has this across-the-board belief that some of these black celebrities that are successful, that if they were in close proximity, friendships, education, what have you, with whiteness, that equals or equates to some degree of success. I don't agree with that, because you've had black folk that had been in close contact with anyone who was educated. The two young masters that we spoke about that went to Yale and Harvard respectively, they had their mamas that were focused, and they're at Harvard and Yale. They did not have to be white for that to happen. When we interviewed, why am I losing my memory? Captain, the great educator from Chicago. You know what I'm talking about. I can't recollect the name right now. It'll come to me. She is of African descent. Marva Collins. Thank you, B.A. Oh, God. That ginseng. Marva Collins, and I would implore the listenership to go into their archives. Great interview. She taught the classics. She taught the unteachable. These kids were considered unteachable. Unteachable. And yet, they went to some of the best schools in the country. They're in their 40s and 50s. They have succeeded. But their trajectory was going to be different. They just had an intelligent person. They had a concerned person. So his whole belief that there has to be a white person in close proximity, that falls against closer examination. It just does. So anyway, he's interviewing a comedian, up-and-coming comedian, by the name of Jermaine Fowler. Jermaine Fowler. I want you to hear a little bit of that. I took snippets of the interview. Pay close attention to what he says, what he's asking of Mr. Fowler, how Mr. Fowler responds, and how we're being clowned, sort of. We're being clowned because he sees a trope with black folk Let me repeat myself. He sees a trope, he sees the meme, and it looks like Mr. Fowler is going against the meme, but then he doesn't. And it goes off the tracks. Hold on. This is the Neil Brennan, Jermaine Fowler interview. Pay close attention. Hold on.
So what was your how'd you grow up?
I grew up two parents.
Two parents.
Word.
Round of applause. Come on.
I had a mommy and a dad.
You had a mommy and a dad?
Mommy and a dad, man. My mom was 16 when she had me. Dad.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, yeah,
now we're
yeah.
Back on track.
Oh, dude, yeah. They were born in D.C., raised in D.C.
How old was your dad?
My dad's probably
46.
17. Oh, Jesus. No, this wasn't the Middle East. He was probably like at least 17, 18, right? And we were poor as fuck growing up. And, I remember, my parents got married real young, and I remember the wedding. Like, I was 8 years
damn.
Old. Yeah, it was May 15, 1996.
You were the flower boy?
Nigga, I was the best man. It was me and my brothers.
Like,
they had four kids by the time they were married.
You
four fucking kids.
You threw the bachelor party as well?
It was Chuck E. Cheese, yeah, it was me, yeah.
Cheese was a stripper?
It went to the arcade shit. Nah, I remember all that. We were poor as fuck. And grew up. I was born in D.C. Pretty much raised in Maryland. That
was more popular. Than
Jerome
you?
Was Jerome was the most popular dude I've ever. Jerome women loved Jerome. He was handsome as fuck.
Well, you're cute though.
I'm cute. Jerome was handsome. Like Jerome
right.
had Jerome. You know,
you look
like
identical?
A boy.
He looked like
a
man.
A fucking man when he
yeah.
was a fucking kid.
Are you guys identical or no?
We are fraternal. We have the same features: cheekbones, eyes, all that shit. But he had cornrows. He was shorter than me a little bit. Long beard.
Okay.
He's Muslim now too. You know.
Hey, that takes all the sexuality out of it.
It does.
He's not so handsome anymore.
He's done with it.
Wait, he's Muslim?
He's Muslim now, yeah.
Black 5% Muslim, regular? Regular.
Jerome is, he studies Islam. I think he's a Muslim. He's Muslim.
Is he married?
I think he is still married.
Hold on. Are you not noticing how, I think, my twin brother, I think he's married. I do believe
he
maybe.
He was married. I don't know if he's got divorced or not, but I don't hear anything about it.
Are you not in touch with him?
Not too much. We don't talk too much.
What happened?
We just grew apart. We were twins. We were cool when we were younger. Then I guess high school happened. We just grew
you
apart.
Stopped being twins.
Yeah, yeah. Jerome was, you know, Jerome was kind of into different shit. I was into my shit, you know.
Come on.
Oh,
was
you mean
he
open up?
Of, he was
yeah,
just getting up. All kinds. Before he was Muslim, he was smashing all kinds of girls.
Oh yeah, Jerome was cleaning the house. Jerome was dope. Jerome was awesome.
Did the Islam stuff freak you out?
Not at all. He wanted me to be Muslim too, and I was thinking about it also because my aunt was Muslim, Aunt Deborah.
You know who the Muslim stuff did freak out? America.
My family was dope. We would fuck with like because we had Muslim cousins, Asia and Alicia, my Aunt Deborah, and we I didn't know shit about being. I just knew they couldn't eat pork. That's mm-hmm. the only thing I knew about. We'd always tease them about it.
That's pretty much everything.
Yeah. So you just be like, Jermaine, I'm hungry. Like, well, we got everything's pork in the house or whatever. And we like be brushing our teeth. You can't use toothpaste because it's got pork in it.
That's funny.
You can't watch TV because it's got pork in it. You just always fucking
with
it.
Oh, you got
that.
A pork TV?
Yeah, yeah, we got pork TV. It's got ham in it. Do that shit all the time. So now Jerome's Muslim. I'm fucking him all the time and shit. And I think he's still married. And we grew apart. Actually, my parents divorced when I was 16, right? I was, 10th grade and shit? Yeah, they divorced. Jerome.
Your parents did?
Yeah, they divorced. My mom's a lesbian
man.
Now.
Whoa, yes. Wonderful.
She's great.
Wonderful.
She's
I am of the mind that any woman in their 40s that's single and rational will become a lesbian.
Because dudes suck so hard?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I see it as like a natural progression.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think like someone that comes out as a lesbian isn't just someone that always sort of was, but is more a person that's evolved into.
That it's just given, like, ugh.
By mm-hmm. dudes, do you mean us as sons, me and my brothers, or her, the husband?
The guys, her paramours.
Okay.
Her potential paramours.
Do you believe that your mom always was a lesbian, or do you believe that...
I believe my mom was always, like, kind of just a free spirit. Like, she mm-hmm. was always just...
Hippie-ish or just,
hippie-ish.
Like...
I think she was kind of a hippie. She's every time, like, she actually, like... promoted me to really think outside the box all the time. Like, mm-hmm. we go to church, and she, like, we're going to church, but just know that...
It's some bullshit.
Kind of, yeah. You know what I mean? She's religious, but, like, she knows that some of the stuff is, like... I'm religious in a way, but at the same time, I'm like, I question a lot of shit. She just taught me how to question shit that I believe
right.
in. Why are you believing in this? You know what
now,
I mean?
Now, she came out when you were how old?
Ah, fuck. 20?
20.
I found out when I was 20.
And how do you? How did it? Make
you caught
you feel
her, correct? You walked in on her.
Oh yeah, yeah. She was eating pussy. I was like, oh, this, I
hey,
I know
mom.
Now. I know now.
Is there pork in there?
No, She told me, no, I found out, my little brother Jamal told me, this is how I found out, I swear to God, I get a text message from my little brother Jamal. Jamal texts me, hey, you going to mom's wedding? I'm like, what? He goes, yeah.
The apostrophized wedding?
Wedding. Also, wedding. Have, yeah, it's not even cordial at all. It's
he
a
has
wedding.
That deep voice in text as well?
He has a deep voice in general, but that, this is just my Jamal Jackson.
All right, folks, I let it go. Again, you know how we roll. We're not into expletives. But I couldn't edit everything out of that, and maybe I had to let the expletives ride so you can understand what we're dealing with here. Now, this is not to overly critique Jermaine Fowler, but I listened to this podcast. My mouth is open because of a couple of things. If we do not get a hold of our community, and it looks like we're not, this is what's coming out of it. These nonchalant stories that are being normalized. You know, he's very matter-of-fact about this situation. I'm looking at this thing. He doesn't realize that this is dysfunctional. He's talking about, you know, even the hosts were clowning him because he said, okay, wait, we come from a two-parent household. And, well, yeah, but my mother was 16. Oh, there you go. There you go. Then we say, oh, my mother's a lesbian. Yes, yes, dysfunction. I'm ready. He's clowning the dysfunction because it looked like it might be going against type, against the meme, but it's so much about the meme. And I just stood there and said, this young man's only 25 years of age. His mother's only in her early 40s. And that within itself is a meme, is a cycle that has to be broken. This man is on a certain trajectory, I guess, as far as entertainment. It looks like he may be successful. God bless him. But I just found it troubling that, and even the host asked him, well, I think my brother's still married. You think your brother's still married? You mean you don't know? In my inner sanctum, in the captain's inner sanctum, we know folks that come from fairly functional backgrounds where they know what toilet paper, what bathroom tissue your sibling uses. This young man doesn't know that he's not really sure if his fraternal twin is still married. And I've seen this where you have folks that are living in a house and they're strangers with each other. And this goes cross-racially, by the way. This is a cross-racial phenomenon. We're seeing this kind of dysfunction occurring from many different people, many different types of families. But it has to be analyzed. You have to point it out. I was just listening to this broadcast really, really in awe of how at ease some of our young people are about discussing what's normal to them. He receives a text from his brother that his mother is gay, that they're going to have to go to a gay wedding. 50 Cent, Curtis Jackson, it's reported that he's arguing with his son via text message about his mother and about DNA testing. Now, if you look at his son, I'm going to pose as a genealogist and say this is clearly 50 Cent's son. He looks exactly like him. But to argue, imagine me arguing with the Oracle via text. This is what the world has become, Captain. And I want folks to understand that we are not talking from the cheap seats. We're not. These things are happening up close and personal. We're seeing these things up close. Don Lemon, he lives in Harlem. He says he's seeing black folk litter. But you can't say it. Where my parents reside, the Oracle and the Wedger, as I say respectfully and in a joking way, middle-class community, however, we have seen folks at my parents' abode, you know, their neighbors, having to deal with graffiti from, I don't know where they're coming from, but people are erecting nice white fences, nice garages and that kind of thing. They're building things. And it's not uncommon this next day for someone to graffiti the fence and graffiti the garage doors. Undoubtedly, they're probably looking like my younger versions of my parents. Undoubtedly. Matter of fact, one of my parents' neighbors erected a white fence, and he had to repaint this fence, I believe, 3 times in the course of 2 weeks, because as soon as he would repaint it, someone would put some scribbling on it. These are black folks doing this in a middle-class black neighborhood, and yet we're being told that the Klan is knocking at a door, or will be knocking at the door tomorrow like it's 1950. We can't talk about this stuff that's happening up close and personal. Chris Rock said to Reverend Jackson, up close and personal, why are these black people littering in their own neighborhood? The white man is nowhere to be found. So I brought this out here because I thought it was a fascinating conversation as a podcast, as a comedy podcast, not so funny to me. Captain, I can't believe we got 3 minutes. We need to make these shows 3 hours if we could. What are your thoughts for the 3 minutes remaining?
Well, I think you said it a lot there in a nutshell. There's nothing really to add or take away from that. You know, I think you did a real good job in your informational diatribe. There's nothing more to add or take away from it. You said it all right there. You said it all.
I guess my thing, Captain, is why do these people think that some folks are talking as if they're talking from the mountaintop? They're talking from some space where they're not up close and personal. Don Lemon lives in Harlem. He admitted that. And I know for sure that Harlem has been gentrified. There's some nice neighborhoods in Harlem. But there's also chaos in Harlem. And this is what the black middle class also has to deal with that no one wants to talk about.
Afro Nerd.
If you did not.
You went out for a second. You went out. Get back.
Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, what I was saying is that what many would not like to hear or may not be privy to is that if you are a black person of means, oftentimes, and you can even look this up, oftentimes the black middle class, because of colorism, I guess, or tribalism, you still have to be in close proximity with lower tier folk. And they could care less. And maybe because of jealousy, they will ruin what you have. They will graffiti your garage. They will graffiti your personal space. These are black folks. But when you talk about it, you're not supposed to talk about it. It's as if Don Lemon is delusional. Why do these people – I can ask you this as we go out. Why do they think he's delusional? Like he's lying.
I don't know. That's another deeper situation there that we really don't have time for to get into. We have to do that another time. But it's a deeper situation.
Agreed. Okay, folks, listen, we will do it again Wednesday for another Midweek in Review edition, folks. Let's go out on Roy Hargrove, the Roy Allen song. See you on Wednesday. It's been real. A pleasure. Thanks again.